All right. My security blanket. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Michelle Scott.
Hey, Michelle.
My sobriety date is March 23rd, 2006. My home group is the Triangle Group that meets in Waleska on Sunday nights. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, which I was told in the beginning is a really great thing to start off with. I don't usually prepare for these. I come and I think about a few stories that have kind of happened in my sobriety, and then I kind of come here, and whatever God is going to come out of me, put out for you, is for you and not for me. Well, sometimes for me. there's still some selfish and self-centeredness here. I'm just going to kind of start off with kind of where I come from. I grew up in upstate New York, which I'm sure you can tell because I don't have this Georgia accent here. I don't say y'all yet. I've been here for about a year, so I'm sure that's going to come. But I grew up in upstate New York. I have two sisters, a brother. I have parents who are still married today. And my father is an alcoholic, they are not the reason why I'm here today. They did the best that they could with what they were given, and I've come to realize that after many years and many times working the steps in this program. When the first time I worked the steps in this program, I would have told you that they're the reason I'm an alcoholic, they're my problem, and if they would have just done it right the first time, I wouldn't be sitting here. It's taken me a long time to realize that they had nothing to do with it. So I started off there. It was a small town. I went to school with about 80 people. I graduated from high school with about 80 people, with kindergarten through 12th grade, one big happy building, and which is not good when you're trying to drink and get away with things. I didn't realize, you know, I remember watching my dad drink, and I always said I would never drink the way that he drank. I didn't want to do what he did. I didn't want to end up that way. And right around like my 14, 15 years old, I found myself drinking the same way my dad did. But I would have told you that's different at that time because I was young. So when I was growing up, I wore glasses, like I still do now. I was born cross-eyed. I had an eye turn that turned in, and I used to get picked on a lot about it. And I used to feel very uncomfortable in the room of many other people. So what I started to do was isolate myself to the corner, back corner, where nobody would see me, and try to figure out the room and how I needed to handle myself in groups of people. So that started at a pretty young age. I never felt comfortable in my own skin, ever. Never felt comfortable. Everything needed to be a certain particular way. My hair needed to fall a certain, you know, way. If it was a hair out of place, I'd be frustrated. My parents didn't know what to do with me, because things just didn't go the way that I wanted them to go. So feeling out of sorts all the time, somewhere around the age of 14, my grandmother passed away, and I had some cousins who came into town, and I got in the car with my cousin to drive over there, and she was, you know, 10, 15 years older than me, and she got us some Goldschlager, and I had not been exposed to this yet, but it went around the car, and everybody took a swig, and then when it came to me, I took a big swig. It burned going down, and I couldn't wait for that bottle to come back around. Bottle went to my sister, even though I reluctantly didn't want to give it to her. She took a drink of it and spit it back out, and she didn't want any more. I didn't see that. I thought that was weird. That made no sense. Like this, you know, it talks about it in the big book about, you know, that sense of ease and comfort that comes after a drink. And for me, it was immediately I felt comfortable in my own skin, and I couldn't wait to get more of it because I wanted to feel more comfortable. And so that's the start of my drinking at that point. And it was pretty quickly after that that I started drinking, not regularly, but as often as I could get it. I always drank to get drunk. I didn't understand why you didn't. I don't understand casual drinking. I never tried to do that. It just was never my thing. I always drank for the effects of alcohol. I drank to get drunk, to numb myself out so I could, you know, because all of a sudden now I'm no longer that quiet girl in the corner. I'm the girl in the center of the room, and now I have attention, and boys are talking to me, and I'm no longer the weird girl. So I was really excited about that. So I started partying with my cousins a bit and coming home, and unfortunately my mom was having to deal with my dad's drinking as well as mine now, and I put her through quite a bit, worrying about me, and I just thought she was overreacting. And now that I've been around for a while, I realized that wasn't overreacting. Her daughter was coming home drunk, trying to pee in planters in the living room, and at 16 years of age. And, you know, she was worried that I was going to be turning into what she had to take care of at home all the time. So that kind of carried on for a little while. If the weekend, you know, I wasn't a daily drinker. I didn't drink every day, but if the weekend came and something was going on, I had to be there. I would figure out a way to go with my friends and make up any excuse. We're studying, whatever, to go do it. Eventually, I get to a point where now I'm going to go to college. And what better way to go to college than to pick the school? I was going for elementary education. But there was a school that was great in elementary education. However, it was a party school. And I tell you I'm going there because of the fact that it had great education. That's not the truth. And I didn't realize that till later on, when I constantly failed out of classes because I was out partying the night before and couldn't get up to go to my classes the next day. That's kind of where some things kind of spiraled out of control, and I started doing things that I would have never said I would have done sober. And I just thought I was having fun. Right? Like, this is just fun. It's my 20s. This is what I should be doing. So I kind of ended up in some situations. My senior year in college, I ended up in a car accident where I was hit behind. I herniated two discs in my back, and it was the perfect reason to withdraw from school and party and drink the way I wanted to. But I could play the victim card all the way through. I got to move back home with my parents and have them take care of me. And I got to go out and party and drink the way I wanted to. And like I said, there was never a point, I never questioned my drinking. I frequently drove drunk. I never got caught till later on. And the interesting part is that I never dabbled in other things because, you know, they tried to prescribe me medications and I didn't want to touch them because I'd be, you know, I'd get addicted and I'd be all off course with those. And, yet I'd go out drinking and drive home drunk and black out and not know where I was going or what I was doing. So during that time frame, there was a lot going on with my family and I didn't participate in any of it because I was too caught up in my own world and what was going on with me. So my senior year, I wound up staying back home and partying and drinking. And unfortunately, my dad owning his own company, everybody knew my family. And so as I started going out and drinking, word started getting out how my behavior was and how I was acting. And in a small town like that, you don't want your parents finding out how you're drinking. So the wonderful thing came about that a guy came into my life. Well, he had been in and out of my life, but this time it was going to work. And, he moved to Texas. He was in the military and this is the perfect reason that I'm going to go with him. This is going to work out. We're going to be together and happily ever after. Granted, I had not maintained a relationship any longer than 6 months at that point. Still haven't except for my husband today. So I go move to Texas because this is going to be the, we're meant to be together. You know, I had all these ideas in my head of like what I was telling myself, what was going on. And the reality is, and I didn't realize it till I came here, was that I wanted to drink the way I wanted to drink. I didn't want my parents to find out and I didn't want anybody stopping me. And he was the perfect reason to go do that. I could go to Texas, nobody would know me there, and I can go drink and party just how I want to. And I did that. Unfortunately, that relationship was not a healthy relationship, and I knew that going into it, but I thought, this time it's different, right? So it ended up not working out well, and I stayed there for about 6 months, and after about 6 months, we ended up having some pretty major conflict between the two of us, and I didn't want to admit that it was going wrong and moved back to New York with my family. So I moved to Texas, Houston, Texas. So I went from Killeen to Houston, Texas, because why not, right? I moved in with a cousin, and I wasn't homeless, but I was living at my cousin's boyfriend's dad's house in like a closet, basically. But I was paying rent. I paid $100 a month for this rent. And see, this is the stuff that I didn't realize that I didn't give, you know. I came in here and I remember thinking, I had, you know, when I did the first step, my sponsor's like, tell me how your life is unmanageable. And I'm like, it's not. I'm managing well. I'm paying rent. I'm, you know. So anyways, I'm living at this house and everybody's drinking and partying together. And it was very quickly that I ended up kind of putting myself in situations that were jeopardizing my safety, which I did that all the time. You know, I look back and I realize, you know, this program teaches us how to come to know God, and God is my higher power. God's just easier to say for me, and it works out that well. But I come to realize how much God was watching over me when I was drinking, and I didn't think there was a God in my life. You know, growing up, my parents went to church. We went to church every holiday, and very regularly every holiday. And I can tell you that in going to this church, I would sit in there and I would hear wah, 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 like the Charlie Brown thing. And it'd go in one ear, out the other. I didn't understand any of it. I just went there to play. But I did hear that if you're not good and you can't be good, then you're going to hell. Like, that's it. So at a very young age, I thought to myself, well, I can't be good, so I might as well not be good, right? Like, I'm just going to go all out. And, you know, I shared that I was cross-eyed, and I had a lot of struggles with getting picked on with wearing glasses and cross-eyed. And one time I remember crying and asking God to make me beautiful. And, it didn't happen the next day, that I wasn't this like beautiful girl the next day. And so then all of a sudden I came to this part that there is no God. There's no God, and God's not here for me. And so probably around, you know, 10 or 11, I shut God out of my life. There was no God. And so with that being said, now you understand why for many years I was running the show and trying to do things my way. Thankfully, God was there even when I pushed God out. And many times I'm still standing here today, because there's many times I shouldn't be. So while I was in Texas, I worked at a bar so I could drink and do whatever I wanted to, just the way I wanted to. And I dated this guy who was a, fireman paramedic, and they were great to hang out with if you were a drinker, because, I could drink. I see many heads going, yes, yes, yes. And, I could drink the way I wanted to with them, with that group, with that crowd. And it was awesome. Now, that relationship was not a very healthy relationship. And at one point I remember getting into a fight, and I said to myself, I'm not going out drinking tonight. He didn't want me to go out drinking. And I was like, who tells me what to do? You know, I'm going out drinking tonight. I'm going out with my friends. So I go out with my friends, and, I had one drink. And, from what I remember, one drink. And, on my way home, I remember texting, I should not be driving right now. And meanwhile, there's red and blue lights going off behind me. I get pulled over. And now this is the first time that I've ever been caught drinking and driving. Now, there was many other times I should have been caught. And I remember standing there with a police officer, and he's asking me if I had been drinking. And I'm going like this, and like my prayer that, you know, I shut God out of my life. But in this moment, God, oh, there's a God, and he's going to save me from this. And God, if you can just keep me from wobbling, get me out of this one, and we're good. Like, I'm all in. And I didn't get out of that one. So they took this sweet, nice little girl to jail. And I remember sitting there by myself. Thankfully, it was a pretty small jail. And I sat there by myself in four concrete walls. And I thought, I'm a good kid. Like, I haven't done anything bad other than, like, maybe some illegal things occasionally, but, you know, I'm pretty good. Like, I'm a pretty good kid. Why am I sitting here? And the reality was that I'd taken out my family entirely, being in New York. They were in New York, taken out my family, taken out my friends. There was nobody sitting there except for me. And all of a sudden, it became very clear that it might be me that's the problem. So while I was sitting there, like I said, my boyfriend was a fireman paramedic, so he had some in with the police department. He also had a dad who was a police officer. And the worst way to meet your boyfriend's dad is in jail through glass. However, that's how I met his dad. Drunk, barely remembering it, and his dad was telling me, you know, what to do and how to get out of this. So the next day, they transferred me to a bigger facility, and I was scared for my life. This girl does not fit well with people who have been in jail a lot more times than I have. Thankfully, my boyfriend at the time and his dad came and bailed me out of jail. And I got to ride in the car with my boyfriend's dad, who is a police officer, and meeting him for the first time, hungover after sitting in jail. And so that was not the right, that relationship did not end well, let's just say that. So anyways, I go home, and at that point, I'm starting to question my drinking. So, like, my entire drinking career, I never questioned my drinking. I thought, you know, I've said no to other things because I know that I could be addicted to other things and go flying off course. So, like, clearly I don't have a problem with alcohol because I can, like, take it or leave it, right? So this was the very first time that I started questioning, maybe I have a problem with alcohol. So at that point, I had a week. So I had a week, you know, I knew that I was going to have to go to court and find out, like, what's going to happen. And within a week's span, I did what it talks about in the big book of all this, like, questioning, trying to control our drinking, seeing if we, you know, trying to have a little, trying to do a little bit and then none, or, you know, that portion in the book. I can't quote it, but I know it. So the first night that I was back home, I told myself that I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a half a glass. I'm going to go out and have, I'm going to have water. I'm going to have just water, see if I can sit at the bar with my friends and just drink water because they're all drinking. And I did. I drank water. I drank a pitcher of water within like an hour. So I thought that was great because I was hydrating myself. So I went home, and so I proved myself at that point, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm fine. And then I thought, well, man, I'm probably going to be put on probation, so I probably shouldn't drink at all. And then I thought, like, maybe the next day, I'm probably going to be put on probation, so I probably should drink now. And so I decided that, okay, I'm going to go out and try some controlled drinking, because somewhere in my head, someone somewhere said that if I can leave a half a glass on the bar, I'm not an alcoholic, and I'm fine. And so I said, I'm going out with my girlfriend. You know, she had this, like, major issue going on. So I go out to support her, and I drink a half a glass. Half a glass. Yes, a half a glass. And I cannot tell you for the life of me what her issue was, because I had no care of what was going on with her other than making sure that I was exactly half a glass. I left that bar. I went to the next one, and I did it again. I did exactly half a glass. Because now, I've now drank water and proven that I can go to the bar without drinking, and I've now proven that I can go to the bar and have half a glass. So I'm good. I don't have a problem. So, this is how God works in my life. The next day, I was working at a tanning salon. So the next day, I go into work. This guy comes in, and I'm telling him all about how I got this DUI, and man, it's like crazy, and I don't know what I'm going to do with this, you know, I'm going to be in jail, I don't know what I'm going to do, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm allergic to alcohol. I break out in handcuffs, and I was like, oh, me too, I get that, and I didn't know that he was talking about coming here, but I thought, that's brilliant, and he didn't share anything with me, and I don't know where it had come from, but something came to me that, you know what, I should try AA. And I'm going to call my boyfriend's dad because he's a cop, because clearly he's going to have some understanding of what the court system is going to say about me going to AA. Are they going to support it? Maybe he knows where I can go. So I get his phone number and I call my boyfriend's dad at the time. And I said, hey, I think that I need to go check out AA before, you know, I don't want to go when the court tells me. I want to like look good and tell them that like, look, I'm going to AA. And he said, that's great. I have 16 years of sobriety. So that is how God works in my life. And God works that way in my life today. And at the time, I didn't realize that that was God working in my life. But that's, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. I mean, these things just kept happening. And he had told me, you know, this was on a Wednesday or a Thursday. And he said, okay, you know, very first thing, don't go to a speaker meeting. You don't want to go to your speaker meeting for the first one because you only hear one story. Sometimes you don't hear what you need to hear. And he said, so, but I'm taking someone else to a meeting on Saturday, and I'll take you with me if you want. And I said, sure, why not? I had two days to try to get through without drinking. He said, don't drink. I'll pick you up when you can come with me. And I said, okay. So I go the next day, and all my friends are calling me, telling me how they're going out drinking. And I am, like, antsy. Like, I want to go out with them. I promised my, you know, I've got to make this up to my boyfriend's dad because, like, he saw me in jail. I'm like, you know, I've got to make it. And I had this overwhelming feeling that I just wanted to disappear in that moment. And I didn't know at the time. I thought I just wanted to, like, go out and get obliterated. But I know now, like, that was, I wanted to die. I wanted to die because I had no solution. I had no answer. And I didn't know how to stay sober. But I wanted to be and do what they were doing. Thankfully, even though that relationship didn't work out with that boyfriend, he saw how much I was suffering, and he took me out to a movie that night, and I stayed sober. By the grace of God, I stayed sober because I did not want to stay sober that night. And the next day I had to work, so that kept me sober for a little while. So I end up going, and I go with my boyfriend's dad to this meeting that he took me to. And, of course, he tells me not to go to a speaker meeting, but this meeting that he takes me to is a speaker meeting. So we wind up at this speaker meeting, and this guy tells a story. It's a bunch of older gentlemen in this meeting. There was no other women. I'm this 24-year-old girl coming into this meeting, sitting down quietly, and this guy tells his story. And he's a lot older than me, but he tells my story, and he talks about how he was cross-eyed. He talks about how he, you know, had this opportunity, and he shared his story. And I remember sitting there and seeing this road split because he kept drinking. And I was at a point where it was this awareness of, I'm either going to give this a try, or I can do what he's doing, and I can just keep going down this path. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to try. I'm just going to try this. I'm going to give it my all, because when it doesn't work, I'm going to show you that I did everything I could. Because that's how I am. I'm a good, like, all in, show you everything I'm going to do, and then out. So I start going to meetings. I start meeting with some people. The guy from the tanning salon, I saw him at a meeting later and realized that that's why he broke out in handcuffs. And I connected with him and evidently had him sponsor me for a period of time. I'm not sure if any of you know how that works out, but we did 1, 2, and 3, prayed on the side of the bed, got in it together. Don't recommend it in new early sobriety for me personally. Thankfully though, I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to drink. Because I said, I'm staying sober and I'm doing this all in. So at that point, I had this opportunity to move to Florida. I was 1 month sober and I moved to Florida and, moved in with another guy. So, nothing changed. Nothing changed in those, before I did the 4th and 5th steps, like nothing in my life changed. I still lied. I still cheated. I still stole. I still had multiple relationships, you know, trying to balance the act. It wasn't until I did a thorough 4th step that all that stuff changed. That all of a sudden I started to become this woman that God has made me to be and who I could be, who I didn't think that I could be because I wasn't deserving of being square. That's the way I call it. So I moved to Florida, and, you know, I remember meeting some people who had told me that you should go to your very first meeting that you can get to. And so I go to this very first meeting, and I meet this woman there, and, you know, she did not look very friendly, but we exchanged phone numbers, and we connected back and forth. And she actually became the maid of honor in my wedding. And that's, you know, I did not want to call her. She didn't want to call me, but we did it anyways. And eventually we connected. We became roommates. And she introduced me to my husband, actually. I was 1 year and 4 days when I met my husband. Thank you. So, you know, in my first year, I found a female sponsor when I moved to Florida, and we worked the steps. And now, like I had told you, I had come to understand that there was no such thing as God. God didn't exist in my world. And when I came to do these steps, I started to realize how my life was unmanageable, that I was living, you know, basically on somebody's couch, that, you know, the idea that I think I'm managing my life is insanity right there. And that I had no other choice but to try what you guys were doing. Cause like I said, I'm going to give this a year and I'm all in and I'm just going to do it. And, once I did that, these amazing things started to happen. I was able to be present for my grandmother's funeral and support my family without drinking. I was able to be there for my uncle's funeral and support my family without drinking. I was able to go through, some health issues in my first year of sobriety. I was able to quit smoking in my first year of sobriety, which a lot of people don't recommend. And I don't necessarily recommend it either. However, I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to drink, and I worked the steps on it, and I was able, and so far, 11 years without a cigarette. So that's awesome. So I spent 11 years in Florida. After my first year, I got involved in a relationship early in sobriety with somebody in the program, and it was a great relationship to stay sober, but we had nothing in common outside of that, and I didn't realize that until we were going to sign up for a Blockbuster card together, if anybody knows what Blockbuster is. Kind of like Netflix, but it's a real DVD and VHS tapes. So we go in to get this Blockbuster card together, and they asked if I wanted a joint card together, and I was like, no, that's too much commitment there. And shortly after that, I realized that this relationship might not be going anywhere. And so the amazing thing about that is shortly after that, I remember coming home to staying with my friend in the program and going outside, and just finally, for the first time in my life, I was okay with me. I was comfortable in my own skin. I didn't need a guy to make me feel better. I didn't need something or anything else to make me come out of that corner. I could finally be in these rooms in amongst all of you with, like, who I am, as I am. And the amazing thing about that is that I didn't want to be in a relationship. I didn't want to get started. I was, like, okay being single. So I continued going through the steps, and I went through and made my amends. One of my amends was a financial amends. Mm-hmm. And I'd stolen from a job that I worked at. And my sponsor had this brilliant idea. She was going to Virginia. I'm going to get a cashier's check. I'm not going to sign it. She's going to mail it out of Virginia and free and clear. Well, I got my taxes back, and my boss had a little note on my taxes saying, thanks for the money. Just when I thought that I was pulling the wool over everybody's eyes, I was not. That was the reality for me, that, you know, I wasn't doing anything to fool anybody. So, as I said, I lived with my friend in the program, and she had my now husband reached out to her and asked her if she knew anybody, because he had gone through a divorce and was looking to start dating again, asked her if she knew anybody to introduce him to. And she said, well, I have this friend. She's about to get out of a relationship, and I won't introduce you until that's done. However, I think the two of you might get along. So I was a year and 4 days sober, and that relationship had ended, and I go with my friend to meet this guy, and I am like, no, I don't want to meet a guy. Like, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't need this. So we go, we watch him play soccer, kind of. We talked, and he played soccer. And afterwards we got to talking, and he asked me if I would give him my phone number. And like a lady, I said, no, I'll take yours. So that way you don't stalk me. because you might. And so I take his number. We get to talking, and on the way home, I remember telling my girlfriend, I said, you know, he seems really nice, but, like, I don't want a relationship. Like, maybe just coffee. Maybe we'll go out for coffee sometime, but, like, that's it. So I text him when I get home to tell him, because he wanted to go out the next day. And I was like, hey, are you awake? And he's like, of course. And I said, okay. So I call him up, and I'm, like, ready to tell him, like, you seem nice, but I'm not ready for a relationship. So I call him up. We talk for 5 hours. It doesn't come out of my mouth. We go on a date the next day. Now we're married with kids. So I can tell you that that relationship is an amazing thing because, you know, it's the first time in my life that I sat with somebody and I disclosed my stuff because I sat with my sponsor and I said, here's my fifth step. And I sat with him and I said, here's what I come with. This is my luggage. This is my baggage. And he did the same with me. And we could clear the air. And we could be, you know, just, you know, I was just talking the other day with him about how, you know, within our first year of dating, we got 2 dogs, a cat, and a car. And I thought, that's really weird, because, like, I didn't even want a Blockbuster card, like, a few months before you. And here I am getting a car, and it was never any, like, question. There was no question. It just worked. And, you know, we had come to understand at that point this a belief in God together and this religious God. And I started attending church, and it was this really beautiful thing that we could have together. And he ended up, he proposed, and we got married. And like I said, my girlfriend who I met in the program was my maid of honor. And this program is so amazing because the day that I got married, I went to a meeting that morning because to me, like, I remember thinking, like, how do you stay sober at a wedding? And I have alcohol here for people that drink. And I went to a meeting that morning, and a few of the women from the meeting came and showed up standing on side of my wedding to support me there. And everybody else thought they were crashing the wedding, but I knew why they were there. So we get married, and we have this beautiful life, and we're you know, I'm staying sober, and he's doing his thing, and we decide a year or so later that we want to try to have kids. And so at that point, I got pregnant pretty quickly. I got pregnant, and a few weeks later, I found out that we were having twins. And I remember at that moment thinking, wow, like, God must love me because, like, he thinks I can handle 2 at once. Like, I don't really know if I agree with this, but evidently God thinks I can handle 2 at once. And so we go through this whirlwind of emotions and all this stuff, and about right around 17 weeks, we go into the doctor because some test results came back funny, and we found out that we had lost one of the babies, and we found out that we were going to have a boy and a girl, and the boy had passed. A couple weeks past that, I had come to this point where I was like, okay, like, we're not having a boy, we're having a girl, let's move forward, let's do this, and we go into the doctors, and we found out we lost the girl, and this was the weekend of International Convention. And I had relocated to an area where I hadn't connected quite yet. And so I was still traveling down to Orlando to see all my people. And all my people were in San Antonio that weekend. It was the Friday before. And I had to go 5 days carrying those babies before I would deliver them. And I remember at one point driving home, and that feeling of wanting to disappear came over me very strong. And so it talks about it in the big book that there comes a point where there's no mental defense against you and a drink except for God. And I can tell you that I know without a shadow of a doubt that I would be drunk right now standing here, if not dead, if it weren't for God standing in the way of that moment. Because I knew that at that point I couldn't handle this. I wanted to disappear. I wanted to be knocked out. Like, this is too much feeling. I didn't get sober for this crap. Like, this is not cool. So I leaned into these women in this new area that I had moved because I had no other choice. My support system was gone. And so I leaned into all these women, and I shared, and I poured my heart out, and I got through it, and I delivered, and I got to hold those babies, and I got to experience that. And I remember sitting in that delivery room with my husband, and we looked at each other, and we said, why are we okay? Why are we okay right now? And I knew that God was taking care of me. I knew that I was, you know, as a result of this program, God had taken care of me. He was holding me in that moment. So it was, so I did what I do. I connected in meetings. I went to more meetings. I shared what was going on. I told people what was happening with me. a few months later, I got pregnant with my son, and I have a 7-year-old beautiful son today. And he, a year later, after having him, I didn't realize what had happened is that I started to pull away from meetings. I stopped doing my prayer and meditation in the morning. I stopped doing my 10th step at night. Because you would too, because you're busy with kids. Like, I don't have time. Like, I'm waking up with this thing and going to sleep with this thing. Like, I don't have time to pray. Like, there's no time. Like, that's the lie I told myself in that moment, that that's what was going on. And it took me a long time. It took me a new sponsor, because I had the sponsor I had at the time didn't have kids, and so she just kind of tried to nurture me through this, and she didn't know what she was doing because she didn't have kids. So at some point, I found myself pregnant with my daughter and having her, and I was thinking, I'm not going to stay sober if I don't, like, get in more. So I started picking up more meetings and going to more meetings. I got another sponsor who had kids in the program, and I sat with her, and I was, so my life at that point, prior to kids, it was beautiful and lovely, and, you know, I could handle situations which used to baffle me, and all of a sudden I have kids and I'm punching walls, I'm kicking fans, I'm frustrated with my kids, I can't handle it. And I tell myself, it's just postpartum. You know, it's grief from what we lost. And so I sought outside help, and some of that had helped. And then I, you know, my sponsor that I'd had who had kids helped me to work through what the reality was is that I had come in this program to rely upon God. And then when God failed me in what I thought God needed to do, I then became in control again, especially with my kids. I'm going to take control, because if I give God control, he's going to take him away. So I remember hearing a speaker say that, you know, God created us in his image and we did the same in return. And so to me, what that tells me is that I made God this punishing, awful God, because that's how I thought of myself. And so it took me a long time and a lot of steps and a lot of years to come to this point to realize that I have no control over my kids and that God is a loving God. And so I don't even know what time it is. I don't even have it, but we're here. Hey, I'm at the podium. So anyways, I'm going through that, and, you know, it's very emotional and very difficult. It's for quite a few years in sobriety. My husband, if you asked him, he's not one of us. If you asked him what was going on, he thought, I just figured you'd get better eventually. You know, he dealt with it. He just thought that I was just doing my thing. And so as you know, I moved here to Georgia a year ago. And a little bit over a year ago, I was not planning on moving to Georgia. We were not planning on moving to Georgia. My husband had a job where he could not relocate his job. And so what happened was he found an ad, started questioning about it, and one thing led to another, where someone came and put an offer on our house without us selling it, listing it. It wasn't even ready to be sold, and gave us an offer we couldn't refuse. And then these ideas started coming up, well, what if we grow your business in Georgia? What if we do this? So all these things started happening. So yet again, here's God presenting himself in my life, even though I've shut him out completely. He carries us through it, and I'm full of fear as we're going through this, because are we going to get the house we want? Are we going to be able to survive? Can we pay our bills? What can we do? Everything, you know, clear stop sign. God, if this is not your will, clear stop sign, clear stop sign. No yield, just a stop sign. There's no stop signs. And a few months later, we wind up moving here. And here we are in Georgia. Don't know anybody. My husband's traveling back and forth to Orlando. And all of a sudden, I'm having to reconnect and get to know all these new people here. And with kids. And my life spiraled out of control really quickly. And for me, out of control at this point in my life is I'm frustrated with my kids. I can't be the mom I want to be. I can't enjoy them. I can't, you know, I remember hearing a new girl coming into a meeting saying how she just loves her kids. She loves how she's just engaging with them and participating. And I'm like, I hate my kids. I can't stand them. I don't know how to do this. And I'm sober 11 years. Like, why isn't this beautiful and wonderful? And somebody had told me I needed to get a sponsor here in Georgia. And so I was like, all right, fine. So I get this sponsor who, you know, she sounds like she knows her stuff. And I think, you know, I've never gone for sponsors who are light and easy. I like the ones that, like, are loving yet, like, throw a punch at you every now and then. And so I find this woman who throws a punch at me, who says to me, I'm calling her up like, I can't handle this. My husband's out of town. He's having fun. And I'm here holding down the fort with dogs full of skunk and, you know, drive. I don't know anybody and snowing here. Like, what is the deal? And she's like, do you know what your husband's doing? And I'm like, he's having fun. And she's like, no, he's working hard for your family. And you need to call and make an amends to your husband. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, he's in the wrong here. And he put me here. And so I go and I make this FaceTime amends to my husband. And he looks at me and he says, your sponsor told you to call, didn't she? He knows. He knows that I don't always do this on my own. And I said, yes, but it's true. I've been in the wrong, and I need to change, and I need to do better here. And I got on my knees, and I asked God to remove from me the power that I think I have over my kids, that my life has become unmanageable over my kids because I've let go of control of God. So I go through the steps in the loss of my twins. And I start doing this stuff, and I start going through these things, and here I am, okay, a year later. And I can tell you what's happened in the last month and a half is like beyond crazy. And I have not lost my cool. I've been a little frustrated normally. So let me just give you a little synopsis of what's gone on the last month and a half. I've come to realize that my eyes being turned in, that I see two-dimensional. So I'm starting therapy where I can see three-dimensional. I'm starting to see depth. I'm starting to see the world where things pop out. That's crazy. I am understanding that, like, I have seen this world in a totally different way, and I'm learning how to do this in a different way, and it's no different than what I'm learning in the big book, that I'm seeing the world in a different way, yet I get to do it with my eyes. So I started this therapy. It's been very draining and difficult. The week after that, my husband and I start doing a will and testament, which, whew, that's a little tough. Talk about adulting at that point. But I get to do that today. I get to be sober, and I get to make these adult decisions for my kids that, like, in the event that something happens to me or my husband, that they're safe. I wouldn't be doing that if I was drinking. My kids would be in the car with me, not safe. I know that. I don't have to be drinking with my kids to know that I am not a safe parent for my kids. In fact, I've told my husband, if I ever drink, you take those kids and run because I'm not safe. And so then after that, we end up getting our bank accounts hacked into the week after. People taking out money, we have to close accounts, open accounts. And shortly after that, my husband slides on a mountain in our neighborhood, down a like steep mountain in the car with my kids in the car, our kids in the car. And they're all safe, and the car didn't roll. And that God took care of them and watched over that car because it should have flipped. And then shortly after that, I end up having to deal with some major issues with my son with school, which is really difficult. And it's been one thing after another and sicknesses. And what I can tell you is that the promises do come true, that I've been able to handle these situations, which normally would baffle me. I didn't punch a wall. I didn't kick a fan. I didn't yell at my kids. If anything, I've been able to maintain myself. But the thing is that this isn't me doing it. I've come to realize that, like, God is taking over. And if I just let God, it's so much easier. But man, is it really hard to just let go. But when I do, all of a sudden it's wonderful. I always take it back and I grab it and I hold it and I play with it for a little while. And then eventually I let go again when it gets really too hard. But, you know, that's the thing is, you know, I haven't come back to the religious understanding that I was at one point. But I know I have a deeper relationship with God in my life today as a result of the tragedy that my husband and I had. And, you know, that's what this program does for me. My sponsors are not counselors. They're not psychologists. They take me through these steps, and I come to understand in a better way than I did when I came in here. And, you know, if I can stay sober through grieving twins, I think you can stay sober too. And I remember one thing I have to share because it's just, I love this story. When I came in and I went to that meeting with my boyfriend's dad, I remember him showing me his chip and his 16-year chip. And he had told me, if you want to drink, call me. And if it's a good enough reason, I will go drink with you. And I remember thinking, wow, like, and there was never a reason to make him drink. And that kept me sober for a little while. And so, You know, I am honored when I get asked to speak, because what it does is it helps me to realize, one, just all the things that I've gone through and where I am today, because I forget how much I've grown here. And I get to remember how much you guys contribute to my sobriety and help me to stay sober and show me how to stay sober. I want to thank you, Danny. Thank you for asking me to be here. Thank you for letting me speak and to be here with you guys, and for showing me how to stay sober and have a wonderful life today. So thank you.